argument today is United States against Moses. Ms. Boyle.
Thank you, Judge. Good morning. May it please the court, Mr. Biskupic. I represent Mr. Christopher Moses. There were two issues presented for review in this appeal. The first one deals with the denial of Mr. Moses's Rule 29 motion. And basically what that translates to is whether or not the government proved their case beyond a reasonable doubt. And I certainly recognize that the standard is certainly an overwhelming standard that I have to overcome in order to try to suggest that the government did not prove their case beyond a reasonable doubt in this matter. The second issue is a matter that has not been presented to this court in any prior cases, and that is whether or not it is multiplicitous to charge Mr. Moses with each and every 40-millimeter round of ammunition that was found in his residence, in the residence that he owned. I would like to focus first on the issue as to whether or not Mr. Moses could have been found guilty beyond a reasonable doubt of being in possession of the gun and ammunition that was found in his residence. I did not represent Mr. Moses at the time of his trial, and I know that Mr. Biskupic was not trial counsel for the government in this matter. However, I would suggest to the court that based upon the record that is contained in this case, it does not appear that there has been any establishment of any nexus between Mr. Moses and being in possession of those firearms and ammunition. It is certainly clear, based upon the testimony in the record, that Mr. Moses was the owner of that residence in the sense that his name was on the deed. There was no items other than one piece of mail that was found to connect directly Mr. Moses to anything inside that residence other than some ammunition that was found that was military-grade ammunition and the fact that Mr. Moses was a former member of the United States Marine Corps. That is it. He was discharged in 1994. This occurred, and the indictment alleges that on or about April 19, 2005, he possessed these items. The record is clear that there was an individual that was residing in this residence by the name of Christopher Brady. He did not testify at trial. There was another individual by the name of Christy Stuffel who was found in the residence when law enforcement came. There was also one piece of mail for Ms. Stuffel found in the residence. There were her pills and purse found in the residence. And there was also her jeans found in the residence and marijuana. It appears to me in cases...
Marijuana in the jeans.
In the jeans, yes, sir. It appears to me in cases that this court has examined regarding constructive possession, that being Quilling and Richardson and Kitchen, there always seems to be additional information that law enforcement found when dealing with those three specific cases. Whether it's an admission from a defendant, such as in Richardson, the defendant said, "We live at the residence," and there was a car of the defendant parked in the driveway. In Kitchen, law enforcement found men and women's clothing, miscellaneous papers that identified Ike Kitchen, the defendant, a gold bracelet with the defendant's nickname on it. He was present at the home. He gave a phone number consistent with the residence that was subject to the search to a cooperating witness, and he had paid for a substantial amount of repairs of that residence. But we don't have anything in here. We don't have a suggestion that there was a pair of undergarments of Mr. Moses found in the residence to suggest that he resided in that residence.
Who was this? There was another male occupant of that residence?
There was, Christopher Brady. I think the record establishes that he was a tenant in this house.
It was a duplex, right?
Well, I think it's a little unclear as to whether or not specifically. I think the government refers to it as a duplex, and I, upon review of my brief, believe I also referenced it as a duplex. I don't know if it's specifically two separate entrances to the residence. I think it was just one residence.
Does the record say anything about the relationship between the defendant and this male resident?
No, sir.
With respect to the female resident, I gather, the government in its brief refers to her as the defendant's girlfriend. Is there any evidence in the record that that, in fact, was their relationship?
I do not believe there's anything in the record to suggest that. There was also a picture, it was Exhibit 30, that was found in a fanny pack shortly before trial. In that picture, it shows a male, and it appears, obviously, that it's somebody that was in the military, standing next to some sort of military vehicle. And that picture was found shortly, if not on the morning of trial. The record is specifically clear that nobody in the world identified that individual as being Mr. Moses in the trial whatsoever. And specifically on page 288 of the transcript, it specifically says when the photograph is identified in the sense that the agent testified that he is the one that found the picture in the fanny pack upon when he was preparing for trial, but he cannot identify who that is. So I would suggest to the court that one piece of mail does not form the nexus. About a week ago, a case came out of the 6th District in Kentucky, United States versus Grubbs, and it has some discussions about just this concept of constructive possession. In that matter, it was an individual who was charged with being a felon in possession for a gun found at his mother's home that he once in a while stayed overnight, but the gun was found underneath his brother's mattress. The government in that case brought forth a witness who said, a couple months before, I saw Mr. Grubbs with a gun. And the government attempted to try to say that that gun was the same gun that was found under the mattress, so therefore Mr. Grubbs was a felon in possession. In that case, the Court of Appeals reversed the jury's finding of guilt in that matter because they said that there was no nexus connection that was established to connect that individual with his observations and that of what was found.
Is there any evidence as to whether there were any leases between these two other individuals?
No, sir.
And the defendant?
No, sir. There was not.
Is there any evidence that anyone ever see him there?
There is no testimony whatsoever that anyone witnessed him going in the home, leaving the home, staying overnight, hanging out in the backyard. There was no witnesses whatsoever presented on that issue. I see that my time is up for this portion. Thank you very much. And as it relates to issue number 2, I am going to rely on my briefs. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, counsel. Mr. Biskupic.
Thank you. May it please the court, Ms. Boyle. One additional factor that Ms. Boyle leaves out is the defendant was there at the time of the search. So, you know, if you look at Kitchen and Quilling and Richardson and our cases on constructive possession, we start with somebody who's there. So you had Ms. Stoffel, who was the subject of the search warrant. And if you look at the affidavit for the search warrant, which was developed by defense counsel at trial as to the relationship, because they tried to pin the guns on Ms. Stoffel, that the law enforcement were there searching for the drugs that were in her jeans. It was a small-time drug case, and all of a sudden they come upon the stash of weapons and the exploding ammunition, which they didn't recognize at first. So the case then gets referred to federal authorities. So there is a certain amount of working backwards. Would it be better record if they had his clothing? Would it be better record if they had more from the master bedroom? Of course. But the district court said, you know, this is what I have. He's the sole owner of the residence since 2003.
Both of you refer to it as a duplex. Is it a duplex as we normally understand?
Yeah, I mean,
duplexes?
Though, again, the record that's developed, they have a diagram, and the diagram is of the lower unit, the master bedroom. And again, there's also evidence that it's in transition. And so the other person residing there, that was put forward by the defense at trial, and as the district court points out, rejected by the jury. I mean, you know, lots of people could have come and gone, but as far as legal residence or any evidence that other third person was residing in the master bedroom, absolutely not. And so the record that was before the district court and the jury, obviously, is present, sole owner, girlfriend, which, again, was developed by the defense. The government witnesses were the searching agents, and they testified about the background of her drug dealing, prompted by the defense. The relationship between Mr. Moses and Ms. Stoffel was put forward by the defense in order to make sure to point the finger at her.
What was developed with respect to the personal relationship between the defendant and
that was her place of residence as well. because that's what the search warrant. But again, that's...
Well, we know it was hers. The question is whether it was his.
Yeah, no. I'm sorry, the purse was not his, of course, given what was inside the purse. Mm-hmm. But what I'm saying is I'm not asking the court to rely upon the hearsay in the affidavit, which got the agents in the door, because the agents are only relying upon that. But I am saying that when the defense at trial puts the two of them together and doesn't dispute in order to make her the culprit, now on appeal say, wait a minute, there was no evidence that the two were connected.
I'm still vague on what evidence there is in the record that she was the girlfriend.
The evidence of her connection to the residence comes from her being present, her things in the house, and the search warrant, which indicated her residing at that residence.
What about her relationship to him as opposed to the residence?
It's not developed because there is not direct evidence, I mean, circumstantially, that the two of them were together there. But certainly the only witnesses for the government were the searching agents, and they could not testify as to the personal relationship between Mr. Moses and the girlfriend.
Was there any other evidence of record as to the defendants having another residence?
Again, other than what was put forward by the defense, because there's no lease, he's not there at the time. It's the suggestion that there's this other person living in the other access to the other residence.
Who did the defense call?
The defense did not call any witnesses. So
they're arguing from whatever the circumstance.
Right, the inference and the like. And so I know Ms. Boyle is relying upon this third person, but the district court doesn't mention that other than that the defense threw that in front of the jury and the jury rejected it. So, again, you get to a factual scenario by which this defense was put forward to the jury and rejected. And the district court then reviewing the evidence says, I got the sole owner, I got his master bedroom, and I've got him there during the search, and then the connection to the military. There, you know, what the district court said is, I can't ignore that he's the guy who was in the Marines. In the testimony of the government witness who was in the Marines, of your access to training with these things. I mean,
were there photographs of him on armored vehicles with that same caliber?
And that was in the master bedroom. You know, and so, you know, are we saying that the jury cannot use their logic of who is going to possess, you know, 5 gold tip 40 millimeter high explosive dual purpose, you know, rounds of ammunition? I mean, that's what the big link was, as opposed to the Ms. Stoffel, whether it's a girlfriend or simply someone who's associated with the residence, whose small-time little marijuana dealing is going to...
Do we have any reason to believe that she was either a tenant or a relative?
We have from the defense development, and I'm sorry, Judge, I don't have it at my fingertips, of the search warrant. The defense, as you can see from the record, wanted to get into the motives of the agents in going for the search warrant, that they thought she was there possessing drugs. That comes out during the defense cross-examination of the searching witnesses. And so, again, even though they introduced it for that purpose, it serves the government's purpose for your question, Your Honor, that she was a person who resided in that residence. That was a reasonable inference from the defense questioning of the agents. But the government agents, you know, we did not put that forward as part of our proposition. Certainly it's part of our case in chief, because whether we ask the question or the defense, it's not overwhelming. None of this is overwhelming, but in combination was sufficient to the district court, and obviously we believe sufficient to the jury. Just on the multiplicity argument, every circuit that's addressed whether ammunition should be lumped together or charged separately has said charged separately. The counts were all concurrent, 84 months.
When you refer to ammunition, I assume you're referring to ammunition that's individually defined as firearms.
Dual purpose, right, explosive, right.
These were just bullets. I assume you would not treat each bullet as a separate count.
Under Title 18, and obviously we didn't under count one. All the firearms under Title 18, including the ammunition, the felon in possession, but we charged felon in possession of firearms. We could have charged felon in possession of ammunition. Case law is clear from the Seventh Circuit and others that that is a single count. So you know, we did what the case law dictated. Count one, lump them together. Counts three through seven, separate them up.
By the way, does anything turn on this other than the special assessments?
Nice to get an answer. I mean, this court's never addressed it. May come up in the future sometime, Judge. But
when you want another $100?
No. I mean,
it does cost more than $100 to litigate these questions.
We didn't raise this question. The defense did. We just answered. Unless there are any other questions, I will waive the rest of my time. Thank you.
Thank you. Anything further, Ms. Boyle?
Briefly, Mr. Biskupic started out his comments by saying, well, Mr. Moses was there. The record's clear. Mr. Moses showed up after law enforcement had already approached Ms. Stuffel, and it's my belief based upon the record that Mr. Moses actually showed up after the search warrant was obtained in the early afternoon hours, and as a result, he was directly handed a copy of the search warrant, and also when the guns were found, law enforcement called to find out whether or not Mr. Moses was a convicted felon, found out that he was, and therefore arrested him. Also, I will indicate to this court, I am not trying to suggest that Christopher Brady is necessarily the one. I, again, did not represent Mr. Moses at trial. However, I would suggest to the court that certainly he was in a position, Ms. Stuffel was in a position to be in possession of those items, but I would submit to the court that at the time on or about April 19, 2005, Mr. Moses was not possessing those items. I will also indicate to the court, and it's included in the facts section of my brief, it was clear from law enforcement that this house was in a position where somebody was either moving in or moving out, whether that was one person or multiple peoples. I think that is extremely relevant for the purposes of the concept of constructive possession, because I don't know if it's even been established that any person was specifically residing in that residence. One can assume, because Ms. Stuffel had a pair of jeans there, that she was a resident. But it's arguable, at best, if she was absolutely positively. And last but not least, I would also submit that, again, I do not think the record shows that exhibit number 30 is Mr. Moses. It is a person that was in the military, and that is the extent of what that shows. Unless there's any questions, I am concluded. Thank you.
Thank you very much. The case is taken under advisement, and the court will be in recess until tomorrow.